You know, we always say as learning professionals that we want a seat at the table, but how do we get the seat at the table? And then once we get the seat at the table, how do we keep it and how do we earn it? And if you don't really have any idea what I'm talking about, that's fine, because we're going to be talking about all of this with Dr. Keith Keating on today's episode of the Learning Geeks podcast, starting now. Hello, boys. Hey.
Hello, guys.
Yeah, good. Welcome. Good to see you.
Sunshiny day out here in Utah. That's nice.
The day we are recording, I know our colleagues in Colorado are undigging from about 2 feet of snow that got dumped on them. Dana, you didn't have 2 feet on you, but up in the mountains, it's
pretty hard. We had it on the mountains, and then we shipped the rest of it on the other side of the mountains over to Colorado. They can have it.
Yeah. Jake, how about Chicago? Where are you guys at right now?
We've been almost upper 60s, close to 70. It's been great.
Yeah.
We had a lot of rain this morning and overnight, but weather has been nice, actually.
Yeah, we've been upper 60s, close to 70. Super
all the
cold.
Time?
Cheesy. No, yeah. No, it's actually nicer in Chicago right now than it is in Long Beach, but it's been good after our rainy summer. Well, listen, before we bring in our guests, guys, I have a little bit of Star Wars news that I just read. And I'm kind of excited about this. I also realize that with our production schedule, it's probably going to be old news by the time we release this. But I also know most Learning Geeks listeners, like, we're their only source for Star Wars knowledge. So it's probably the first time they'll be here. So I just read today that Patty Jenkins' Rogue Squadron movie is back on.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So just to unpack this a little bit.
I thought that was can-canned. Completely.
Interesting, right? So Patty Jenkins is famous for directing the Wonder Woman movies with Gal Gadot. First one I loved, second one didn't love. She was going to do this Star Wars movie called Rogue Squadron about the X-Wing pilots. It was going to reflect her father's experience as a fighter pilot. She was very excited about it. They filmed a video to promo it. And it was supposed to release last December, and it never did, and it was canned. But yeah, apparently she is back on working on writing. She says she owes Lucasfilm a script, and it seems like it's back on. So that would be exciting.
Wow.
That's good, especially if it's more like the first Wonder Woman than the second one. Because I agree. First one was good. Second, put it back in the can.
Yeah.
It had potential, that second one, but like the first one was really good. But that's interesting. Do we know, is it going to be tying into the Mandalorian?
Like the Mandoverse?
Yeah, the Mandoverse.
Do not know. We'll find out.
Interesting.
We'll find out. Content coming. Okay. Let's go ahead and bring in our guest, Jake. I'm going to ask you to introduce Dr. Keith.
Sure. So Dr. Keith serves as the Chief Learning Officer for BDO, an Academic Director for the University of Pennsylvania's CLO Doctoral Program. He's the author of the award-winning L&D Practitioner's Guide, The Trusted Learning Advisor, a respected industry author, a sought-after keynote speaker. Dr. Keaton ardently champions lifelong learning as a pathway to seizing control of one's career trajectory. He's also an advocate for the talent development and leverages his platform to emphasize human talent as the cornerstone of organizational success. So he also resides in Toronto, so it's always great to have a Canadian on board while we talk. So Keith, welcome.
Welcome.
I couldn't have written that introduction better myself.
Isn't it amazing how Jake just comes up with that stuff right off the top of his head? It's amazing.
I do. I'm basically a ChatGPT right now. I'm really good at generating such stuff.
ChatGPT. In the green room, Keith told us that he's also an active listener to the podcast. So we needed to have him on.
Yeah,
yes.
That's great.
Yeah, there's that. But I also have to qualify. Unfortunately, I am not a Canadian. So I live in Toronto now, but not a Canadian. So unfortunately, you're still talking to an American.
Well, that's,
and then
that's
on top
still
of
good.
That,
it's still
okay.
Still
it's still good.
You.
Okay.
Yeah, it's still good.
Yeah.
And I
just
feel like I
bring
should
some Tim
be...
Hortons and we're good.
Oh, no comment. But I feel like I should be really excited with your Star Wars news. So, yay.
Yay. Yay. I think you represent most of our listeners in that, so that's great.
Most of our listeners have a, I think they pushed the 30-second button on your podcast app a couple times because they know that's about the right amount when we bring in our guest.
That's okay. I do that on smart lists anyway, so it's all good.
We all do.
Yeah.
For those who pressed forward, there's a new movie coming out. I don't know anything about it. Don't know who the people are, but you should be really excited when it comes out.
Yeah.
Yes.
For sure. All right, let's talk about learning stuff. Learning advisor. And, you know, I teed this up with getting a seat at the table and everything that that means. And I know that personally I have been railing, I think, Jake, in the video clip that you picked to promote our most recent conversation on there. It was me ranting about we've got to get our stakeholders thinking about how are we actually measuring business results and all of that. So, Keith, like, give us the lowdown. Weigh in. What's your point of view on this? Am I on the right track?
I have 280 pages filled with points of view on this, but happy to distill it down a little bit. So I guess let's start with why this is such a struggle for us. And I take a step back and I think about, and I feel like I'm preaching to the choir here, particularly with you three trusted learning advisors, but our industry really needs to evolve. It's needed to evolve for quite a long time. But I think right now we're at this phase where it's even more necessary for us. And there's one word that comes to mind when I think about this, and that's irrelevance. And for me, I think that our industry is facing irrelevance if we don't evolve in the near future. And the reason is we've got so many Jake GPTs now, or Chat GPT, you know, which is the perfect order taker. And when you think about what type of tool can take orders, I mean, that's exactly what Gen AI does. And that's what we've been doing for years. And now we have something that's truly a threat. Threat may not be the right word, but truly something that could be comparable to us in some ways, where our stakeholders don't have to listen to, oh, I need needs analysis, and I need 6 to 8 months to develop this, and I need more money, and I need more resources, and I need to have access to your people. All the things they hate when we ask to do, which are, you know, normally the right things to do, now they can go and get these solutions themselves. Doesn't mean that it's better than us necessarily, but it's something. And I think based on that perspective alone, and the fact that many of us are getting burnt out, that it's time for us to really look at how do we evolve from being order takers to being strategic business partners who are embedded in the business, who understand the business, can drive value, who are trusted, respected, sought after, otherwise known as trusted learning advisors.
Keith, I heard the phrase one time from the chief learning officer of Steelcase. She said, if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. I really like that idea. Not that I don't like the idea of being on the menu.
Yeah, right.
I like what it's conveying. That's, you know, having that seat in the learning community is really, really important. Otherwise, you know, your budget could easily go away. There's, you know, there are many other options.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One side note, I would say The Menu, great movie, since we're talking about movies.
Yeah, it is a good movie. Yeah.
So good.
It's creepy.
I would actually, and advocating for us to think a little bit differently than just trying to get a seat at the table. Uh-huh. Because I hear that often, like, oh, if I just had a seat at the table, you know, I could drive value. I think that aspirationally, we need to build our own table and invite others to sit with us. And so what I mean from that perspective is when we have this mindset of, if I could get and sit at their table, it's giving the power to somebody else. They control the narrative, the agenda, who's sitting there, how much time you have, what your topic is. But when we build our own table and then invite our stakeholders to sit with us, we are in control and we have that power. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges with L&D is we don't find enough opportunities to take that power back. And I'll give you a specific example, because it sounds like a bumper sticker, you know, build your own table.
Yeah.
So skills. Everyone should be talking about skills, upskilling, reskilling, second skilling, whatever it is. And there's a question that always happens, like, is it L&D? Is it training? Is it HR? Is it talent development? I don't care who wants to own it, but we all should be talking about it. And so what I advocate for, an example of skills, is create a skills advisory committee or skills advisory council or whatever vocabulary works for you. But it is a reoccurring meeting that we set, and we control who we're inviting. So we invite our stakeholders. We invite maybe someone from the C-suite. We invite a frontline worker or a couple of frontline workers who are the ones that are impacted with the skill upcoming skill changes. We look in our network and we invite somebody external to the conversation. We go to McKinsey Global Institute and we go to the World Economic Forum and we pull great data from there. We listen to your podcast and we pull great data from there. And we're curating this conversation. We're orchestrating it. We're the puppeteer. But it's not our voice. It's not Keith sitting at the table saying, hey, here's what we need to do. Rather, it's me bringing these thought leaders together in a curated conversation that is driven by data. And something as simple as this act, where we're setting the meeting, we're preparing, we're pulling the people in, we're the ones that created the agenda, gives us control over that conversation.
And then what is the role of the people who come to your table?
In that specific instance, it's talking about how do we plan for the changes in the skills in our organization over the next couple of years. So, and this is one of, I think, as we talk about the ongoing skills need, let me give you a specific example. At my last organization, when Gen AI began to rise, we immediately knew that a big part of our company was focused on call center agents. We're probably not going to need 2,000 call center agents in the next 3 to 4 years. So what can we do to start planning to upskill them today into other roles? So where are their transferable skills? What are the potential needs of the business? What type of programs can we create? How much time can we put into that? So those types of conversations are what I would have in the skills advisory committee discussions. Also, I bring to my business partners that other data. So for example, this is your business line. This is how Gen AI, this is how technology may be disrupting us in the next 3 to 4 years. Here's what we can do or should start to think about in terms of how we can build up those skills internally today and be having those curated conversations.
I like that, because what it's also doing, I think it's forcing L&D, and if we even broaden out, one of the things that we learned a lot last year with some of the research that my team does around de-siloing people functions, HR functions, talent functions, whatever you want to call them. We call it people functions in our organization, but it's really to think about the holistic lens of, it's not just L&D as a silo. You need to work and think about the entire kind of employee ecosystem, development ecosystem around you. But I like what it's doing, because it's actually forcing more individuals within classic L&D to think beyond the reactive state, to look ahead, to look at elements around you that, again, don't have the classic training development. I mean, I say this all the time. One of the things I personally, when I learn and train myself, I'm more often not looking on outside industries or outside areas so I can see the signals around me to then start to predict and look at, I don't know if I'm great at predicting, but at least try to be proactive to imagine what's next and whether the skills that are next, what could possibly change in our industry, what could possibly change in others. I think that's going to do that. Is that something what you're seeing as well as part of working with, or, you know, talking with other L&Ds and just thinking yourself if that's really where you see us going as well?
So the answer is yes. And then I also, to your point, like to bring in, sometimes I'll bring in a competitor. So at GM, you know, we'd look to find a partner at BMW or Mercedes to bring in the conversation. Like, what are they doing in their organization? Because it breaks down, first of all, it's kind of mystical to the other leaders. Like, oh my gosh, you know, you're bringing in so-and-so. And that makes them want to join the conversation. Whereas to me, I'm looking at, even though they're technically a competitor, we're still trying to solve the same solution. We're all working towards the same goal, which is making sure that we have the right skills in our organization. But for me, it's a bit more aspirational. So my personal motto is empower, encourage, and enable talent to take control over their future through the power of learning. So while I might be working for one organization, I'm evangelizing the need for all of us to be lifelong learners so that we don't live in fear of the future impacting us, taking away our jobs. I mean, if you look at the media, it's so much fear-based. You know, fear is a billion-dollar, trillion-dollar industry. And so it's much more interesting to see headlines that, you know, AI is going to take your job, you know, 80 million people are going to be without jobs by 2030, than it is to actually say, well, actually, we may not have enough people for all the jobs that we have available. Like, that doesn't sell. But people don't know that. And so the way that they overcome that is by being lifelong learners. So I guess your specific question is, yes, I bring in competitors, but I also bring in non-industry points of view so that we're truly scanning the horizon to see what type of changes are coming. You know, that's one example of setting your own table or building your own table. Another example is we will do internal learning conferences at our organizations, but it's not just for L&D, it's for the organization as a whole. So for example, at BDO, we have Talent Week coming up in July. At GM, we had what we call LearnCon. And so it was a one-day conference where we would treat it like you would, you know, external conference. I would bring in keynote speakers outside of the organization who would kind of bring in the draw. And then we would have about 8 different breakout sessions. And the breakout sessions were actually led by our stakeholders or our business partners. And it was an opportunity for them to get on stage and share their success. Now, behind the scenes, it was L&D that helped them do that. I mean, they didn't create that leadership program that drove the change that created more revenue or more value. It was us. But it allowed us to create space for our stakeholders, our business partners, to share their successes. And for me, what I think one of the most important aspects for a trusted learning advisor is to help our stakeholder be the hero of their own story. And I think too often we look at our stakeholders sometimes as adversaries because they're giving us the order or they're the ones making our life maybe a little bit more complicated. And I'm not denying any of that. But if you think about my job is to make my stakeholder the hero of their own story, we're going to win. We're going to win because A, it makes them look good. And for them to look good means that the program, the project, the initiative had to be successful. And if it's successful, it means our learners are also winning. And so in the case of LearnCon, when we have them share out their stories, we're there on the side supporting them. We help them create that case study or that keynote talk or whatnot. But through supporting them, it's also a win for us. So creating your own internal learning conference and having the entire company have access to it, but then using your stakeholders and your business partners to be the speakers is a way for us to, again, build our own table and invite others to come and sit with us.
Mm. Oh my gosh. I feel so guilty
about
because I teach a storytelling workshop, and in that storytelling workshop, I'm saying, like, largely to our salespeople, right? Like, hey, when you go into a sales meeting, tell a story. Who's the hero of the story? And usually they say, oh, it's our company. I'm like, no, it's not your company. It's the clients. Like, you know, to bring it back to Star Wars again, like, you're not Luke Skywalker. At best, you are Han Solo. Maybe you're, you know, you might even be Chewbacca. Maybe you're Obi-Wan Kenobi. You are not the hero of the story. And yet I realize I myself have been sitting here villainizing our stakeholders and thinking of them as, you know, how do we get them to stop asking for a 3-day course and start talking about the performance gains they actually want to see, when I really need to tell that story and make them the hero of it.
Hmm. You know, one thing to add to that too is that oftentimes our stakeholders are order takers as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it took me years to recognize that somebody told somebody told somebody, and now they're telling us. And so we're going back to them. We're saying, hey, we need all these things. And they're like, could you get it done? Just get the order done. And not realizing what it is kind of behind that. And that goes to the importance of needing to have really strong relationships with our stakeholders, seeing them as humans, as our potential heroes of the story, so that we can understand, where did this really stem from? You know, we try to go immediately to that root cause analysis that needs analysis, and that's getting so technical, and we're not taking a step back to necessarily have that relationship with them, to then just be like, hey, is this just a check the box exercise? Do I just need to get this done? Is that what you're telling me? And they can be like, yes. Or, you know, another question that I'll tend to ask is this a fire? So if your house was on fire, you're not going to stand there and say, oh, you know, let's do a needs analysis. Did I leave the stove on? Was it arson? Is it electrical? No, we're going to all come together. We're going to put the fire out. We're going to minimize the damage. Then we can take a step back and do our analysis. And so it's, you know, are they an order taker as well? Is this just the check the box exercise? Is this a fire that we just need to react to? Those are kind of some of the initial questions that I ask, either in my head or to them, depending on the level of my relationship.
Mm-hmm. And Keith, how hard has it been to get the rest of your learning team on board with this idea? I mean, I really like what you're sharing, but sometimes it seems like, you know, as a leader, you're thinking farther advanced, and people who are in the trenches sometimes think, yeah, those are nice in, you know, theory, but practically that's really tough for me because I'm meeting with those stakeholders every day. So how hard has that been, and what have you done to overcome some of those obstacles?
So the best way I can answer it is it's a continuum. It's a pendulum. You know, if I go back to the order taker versus trusted learning advisor, I'm CLO. I'm still treated as an order taker sometimes. Doesn't matter how many credentials I have, books that are out there. It doesn't, I thought that when I got to this stage, work life would be much easier and people would just do what I say. Like, listen
yes,
to
Keith,
me.
Yes, we're doing that. Yes, we'll do that for you. Yeah.
No, it still doesn't work like that. So what I can say, and I share with my team, is there are some days you'll be treated with that trust and respect as a trusted learning advisor, and there are others where you're going to be back to square one as an order taker. And so we have to be able to balance that and recognize the opportunities that we have where we can assert that trusted learning advisor mindset, or we need to take the order. And I think taking the order and being an order taker are not the same thing. To me, an order taker is passive, completely reactive, does not look two steps ahead into where might this lead us in the future. Whereas taking the order means that I'm listening to what you're saying. I'm going to go back. I'm going to analyze this. I'm going to bring you a response. And in that response, there are going to be certain things, considerations. And one of those considerations is, yes, I can do this for you, but here's the risks associated with that. Are you willing to sign off on it? Yes, you are. And I will actually have an email sign off, or sometimes, depending on how coy I want to be, I'll print off something and say, could you please sign here, here, and here, initial here, that you're agreeing to all of this. So that, you know, 6 months down the road, you don't come back to me or my team on this.
Which CC the boss, CC the CEO. Yeah, why not?
Right. Yeah, but they're always going to come back to you. So the answer to your question is, in theory, it is easier for me to say these. In application, it is that continuum where I think we're planting as many seeds as we can so that when those moments arise, we can latch on to the opportunities to be trusted learning advisors. Otherwise, we looked at, hey, sometimes we do need to take the order and get the win so that we can build up credibility. You know, like I think about, is this a new relationship? So at BDO right now, I'm only 2 months in. I'm saying yes to a lot of things that I don't want to be saying yes to. But I know that I need to be establishing credibility right now and building relationships, and going in out of the gate, guns blazing, saying no to a lot of things is not the right way to build those relationships. So I'm seeing that I have some quick wins already. And so now the guard is coming down a little bit, the shoulders are relaxed, and now they're willing to listen a little bit more.
It's a great point.
I love that notion.
It's actually a conversation we had today with some of my team where we said we may have to do a little bit more in the next month or so, because we need to demonstrate the impact we can have to then maybe taper off a bit and come back to more of that partnership like you were talking about. Because we're trying to also influence new people that we've never worked with before that are actually outside of our L&D function. And we need to show our impact because they're just unfamiliar of what we typically do. So it's a great point. Keith, I want to ask you a question that I'm going to use a little bit of your reframing. So you started off with right away of how the L&D industry can be irrelevant, or like, you know, based off of where we're going, you know, with Gen AI and everything else that you just mentioned, there's a potential there for irrelevancy. And, but again, reframing it, where do you see the opportunities that do exist in our roles and skills needed for our people, typically in L&D?
Yeah, I'm great you brought that. I'm glad you brought that back up. I'm great that you brought that back up. I'm grateful you brought that back up. Because let me clarify a little bit. As L&D is largely today, I think that can be made irrelevant because our stakeholders do not need order takers. So if a body of our industry is going to stay as order takers, that's not needed. Trusted learning advisors are what's needed. And so when I look at the value opportunity for us, I think that it's great because I see us as so much more than just training or just learning. You know, we are in this unique position. If we play our cards right, and if we, you know, if the luck of the organization structure allows us to, we can look holistically across the organization. We can be the nucleus of systems thinking, and we can help in so many different ways just beyond learning. So I'll give you an example. One thing I try to do is I create champions, or I try to identify learning champions in my organization. So right now we're doing the same thing at GM. We identified, I think, about 200, 250 champions. And basically what we did is I said to my team, could you just find five people that like us? Like five people that you're connected with in the business that, you know, don't dislike us. Because it's easy to find the ones that aren't big fans of us. Mm-hmm. So then we meet with them on a quarterly basis. And it's a 1-hour virtual call. People are invited. There's no requirement to attend. It's informational. So in that 1-hour call, for the first 7-8 minutes, we talk about what we launched in the previous quarter. Because one of the things we always struggle with is we're launching all these programs, but no one seems to know. Like our emails go right to trash or something. So let's remind them what we just launched. Then let's remind them what's on the runway for the next 3 months. That's another, you know, 7 or 8 minutes. For the rest of the conversation, we just listen. Now, we ask some questions, but our job there is to do some qualitative research to find out what's actually happening in the business. What's happening on the front line? What are the challenges that you're having? And it's not just L&D driven. You know, these aren't not just like, tell us about your L&D experience, but rather it's a broader scope, then gets a little bit narrower. The idea is we're capturing all of this rich data. It's like a mini design thinking initiative, if you will. Qualitative research, empathy research, understanding, whatever vocabulary you want to use. After this call, we synthesize this data. We then sparse it by business unit, and we'll take that data back to our business partners. We'll say, hey, did you know that these are the top three challenges right now that may be happening in your front line? Every time I bring that back, the first question they ask me is, how did you know that? And my answer is, we're meeting with the frontline workers. Mm-hmm. That starts to have them see us a little bit differently, because now they're seeing, okay, you're actually embedded in my business. You know my language. You're out there talking to my people and you're bringing me problems. And then they'll say, or I'll say to them, you know, this is not a L&D problem. I don't know that we can actually solve it, but I wanted you to know that this was happening. And here's how I think you might be able to solve it. So maybe I'll say, you know, hey, contact this business unit because they're actually having something similar, or here's a potential solution for you. And I'm just creating this thread of talking to your people, gathering all this data. I've synthesized it down for you. I'm sharing it back. And not only am I sharing it back, but I thought about some potential solutions for you. Doing that set us on a whole new trajectory at GM, because then what we decided to do was actually brand that. And so then it became the Innovation Garage. And it became this whole roadshow where business partners were looking forward to us thinking about business challenges they were having and how we might be able to solve those. We had some massive, massive wins because we weren't looking at that traditional way of gathering data and just taking input from surveys or right from the business partner. We were out there talking to our learners. So all of this to say, what's the value that L&D can provide? So much. Because we're not just looking at, we shouldn't just be looking at these learning solutions or training solutions. We should be looking at how do we help our business thrive? And even if that's not a learning solution, it's being a connector, building relationships, just brainstorming ideas, and then packaging them up in a very clean way and presenting it to them. And just, you know, our meeting with them would only be for about 15, 20 minutes when we were doing the Innovation Garage. It wasn't this long, drawn out thing. It was more like, hey, here's a potential problem you have. Here's how we gathered that data. Here is a potential solution. Here are five ways it can apply to your business. And then one thing that we would do to take our power back is we'd set the meeting for 20 minutes. And at the 20-minute mark, we ended the meeting. Now, the way I timed it was 15 minutes for us, and then 5 minutes for them to do the, kind of their Q&A and get really intrigued. And then we cut the meeting. It was like, okay, great. Thank you for all your questions. You know, we'll set up more time with you so you can continue going. And it left them kind of wanting more. Mm-hmm. So I know I just shared a ton of information. Sorry.
For those of you joining late, this is Masterclass on Being a CLO with Dr. Keith Keating.
How to monopolize a podcast.
Yeah, come for the Star Wars, stay for the how to do your job. This is fantastic.
Yeah.
This is great stuff, Keith. Yeah, I love it. Is all of this magic inside your book?
Oh my gosh, I'm so glad that you asked that. Here's a chance to plug your book. Yeah. In the book, The Trusted Learning Advisor by me.
Where do I find that, by the way?
Yeah. Could I get that off of Amazon?
You can get that off Amazon. Or, you know, and I not a plug in Amazon, so Barnes & Noble, that's still around.
It is. They just put a new one in down the street from us, like a physical
store. Great place to buy games. Yeah.
A real bookstore. Wow, fancy that. It's funny because I've seen Amazon now doing that as well, which is ironic. Yes, Amazon, any bookstore of your choice.
What else can I do my job better, Keith?
Well, you're doing it. First of all, I mean, this podcast is a great way to be sharing knowledge. And I think that besides reading the book, here's one other thing I would say. read the book. The science of learning. This is one of the biggest gaps in our industry. And I'll say, you know, I'm part of that. I didn't know for the first 15 years of my career that there was a science to the way that we learn. There was a science to the way that the brain works, and that it was important for us to understand this so that we could design learning to meet the way the human brain actually works. So for listeners, if you've not read the book, Make It Stick, The Science of Successful Learning, I highly encourage you to read that. I require every company I work with to do this as a book club book. And, you know, book clubs seems like such a basic tool. We almost forget about it. I think it's one of the most important tools because it creates an opportunity for us to share, get a shared understanding of language. So for example, I come into BDO, I have 25 years of experience and I have all this language, but I'm the only one using elaboration, generation, learning, transfer, all of these, you know, learning science words. So the first thing we did was Make It Stick book club. Notice we did their book first, not mine. I thought that would be way too egotistical to be like, hey, I've joined, now read my book. But it does come second. Anyway, so do a Make It Stick book club, and then maybe the Trusted Learning Advisor book club. But the point is that it's a way for you to gather with your team and to learn and to elaborate on what it is that you're reading, put it into your own words, also create new idea generation of how you could apply it back in your business, you know, talk about learning transfer, talk about sustainment, all aspects that we should be including in the way that we design and deliver our learning experiences. And so by not doing this, we're making the cognitive load much more difficult for our learners. So please. Science of learning. Make it stick.
That's great. You saw us all smile when you said make it stick, because we're all fans. But yeah, Dana, I was going to set you up. Here's a softball for you, Dana. Is anything coming out soon that goes down this track as well?
As a matter of fact, Bob, there is. Coming in April, ATD is publishing a TD at Work, which is basically a 6,000-word article that we put together based on what we're doing in the area of learning science. So it's called The Principles of Brain-Friendly Learning, and it is our version of what's in Make It Stick, what's in How We Learn, what's in Peak, what's in Grasp. It's a whole bunch of those books all synthesized down into Accenture's view of what it takes to make learning sticky. So come April, that'll be available at, I'm sure, at ATD's website. And if any of you are going to the ATD conference, Bob is actually going to be sharing those concepts at a New Orleans session. Yeah, in New Orleans.
Okay. Hey, we got to wrap things up. Thank you, Keith. Thank you for being here. Thank you, Jake and Dana, as always. Thanks to our listeners. Make sure you hit like and subscribe. I made sure I got it right this time. Like and subscribe. And until the next time you hear us with the Learning Geeks podcast, stay geeky, my friends. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.